The relationship between the United States and France has always been rather tumultuous. In 2003, during the diplomatic conflict over Iraq, Colin Powell noted that the two countries have been through two centuries of marriage counseling, and the marriage is still strong. In his new book, For Liberty and Glory, Washington, Lafayette, and Their Revolutions, James Gaines takes a look at the beginnings of that Franco-American alliance as it was defined by two of its founding fathers, George Washington and the Marquis de Lafayette. It's published by Norton, and I'm very pleased it has brought Mr. Gaines to the show today. Hello.
Hello.
You use the quote from Colin Powell in the first chapter of your book. Has the relationship between the I don't want to say America, I mean the United States, because it wasn't always the United States, but whatever this is, and France, been contentious since its inception?
Yes. I would say the answer is quite clearly yes, and for lots of different reasons along the way. But the American Revolution bankrupted France, so they wouldn't have had to have a revolution had they not been so kind to us in the beginning. So.
They blame the monarchy for bankrupting France, giving all the money. Giving all the money to the colonists.
Louis XVI certainly felt that he had been given bad advice by his ministers.
Well, but we've had a love-hate relationship. Tocqueville admired the United States a lot. American writers and artists have chosen to study and live in France. We admire French food and French fashion. I think French wine is still considered the best in this country. So it's been a love-hate relationship?
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. I mean, I live in Paris. I love Paris. It's beautiful. And the French people are really very pro-American, I mean, with some exceptions. One of the things that got me interested in the subject is that war that was going on in the UN, and friends calling me and saying, how could you live in that place when they're being so mean to us? They almost considered me a traitor for being there, and they said that the French had forgotten all we did for them in World War II. I had people coming up to me on the street saying, Chirac and Villepin don't speak for us, and I told my friends, you've forgotten what France did for America in the Revolutionary War.
Do you think that that's all changed a bit now that more Americans are critical of the war in Iraq? We're no longer saying things like freedom prize.
Yeah, I know. My mother was quickly radicalized by the Iraqi war and said that she was going to follow me to Paris. But yeah, I think it's changed. It's also changed because of President Sarkozy. I think he's making real efforts to mend the relationship with America that Chirac damaged,
including vacationing in Maine
and coming to Washington next month apparently for a state visit.
Were you interested in the Lafayette-Washington relationship before the Iraq War and the tensions that it led to?
I was. It really wasn't that started me on this. It was. I've always been interested in why the French and American revolutions diverged so radically, since they were fought over the same ideals and principles.
And involved some of the same people.
And I was interested, too, in the fact that the two revolutions have never really been told as one story. They really are one story. And the French Revolution was a defining factor in American in the formation of America.
Many historians have described the relationship between Washington and Lafayette as being akin to that of a father and a son. But you say that's not really true.
I don't see it that way. I think that Lafayette did respect Washington deeply.
He was much younger. There was an age disparity that would have been a father.
Exactly. Washington was exactly the age where Lafayette's father would have been, and Lafayette's father was killed when he was 2 years old. But Alexander Hamilton's father was killed when he was in an infancy, and Washington certainly didn't treat him like a son, and he was so peremptory with him that Hamilton quit. Washington wasn't very paternal, despite being the father of our country. He was a cold, difficult person. And Lafayette looked up to him, but the two of them differed deeply over certain issues, and at the end of their lives differed over the issue that we differed about in the United Nations with the French, which is the propriety of exporting a nation's ideals by force.
You can usually tell how important a person is in American history by the numbers of streets, squares, towns, and the like named after him. Mm. And there are an awful lot of Lafayette's throughout the United States.
There are 400 Lafayettes, more than 400 Lafayettes on the map of the United States, and yet I think people have forgotten who he was, which is part of the reason I wrote this book.
Well, his 250th birthday was last month, and I don't remember reading about it in the newspapers.
I don't think it was on anybody's calendar but mine.
Conversely, how important a figure is Washington in French history?
Well, as I said, the French have good reason to feel that the American Revolution bankrupted them and led to the French Revolution. There are a lot of people in Paris, especially, who don't celebrate Bastille Day.
Really, they still regret the revolution?
Absolutely. There was in the bicentennial year 1989, there was a poll about how many French people would have approved the execution of Louis XVI, and the result was 26%. It was there are very mixed feelings about the French Revolution, I would say.
The title of your book is For Liberty and Glory. Now, liberty we all understand, but was glory a major factor in the actions of Lafayette and Washington?
I'm glad you asked that question, because the glory was a huge. They were both incredibly. They were incredible glory hounds, and not unlike other men of the 18th century, when there was no to the Enlightenment men. There was no afterlife. Posterity was the closest they could get to defying obscurity. So the place in history was what they were after most of all. But to lead the transformations that they led in American and French society, and really around the world, they had to transform themselves. This was a psychological revolution as much as it was a political one. And Lafayette and Washington had to transform themselves to lead them.
But we're also talking about a philosophical revolution.
Yep.
And the French Enlightenment is different than the English and Scottish Enlightenment. Americans were aware of the French Enlightenment, but they were more inspired by the English language ones, and the French, obviously, by their own. So how much does that affect the ideas of liberty and glory and all the other things that the revolutions brought about?
You know, neither Washington nor Lafayette were particularly thinkers. They were men of action, and they spoke the language of the French Enlightenment and the English and Scottish Enlightenment fluently, but that's not what they thought about. They thought about leading people to action, and so the principles are like, but these men, in order to enact them, had to become different kinds of people.
Well, they're both traitors to their class, weren't they?
Washington
grew out of the upper class British colonists, and Lafayette was the Marquis.
Yeah. You know, Washington was really an aristocrat, and he was very unapproachable. But on his deathbed, he asked his secretary to turn him in bed. And this scene changed everything for me about my view of Washington and the revolutions. When the secretary did it, he had to lay down beside Washington the full length and turn him with his whole body. And Washington said to him, "There comes a time in everyone's life when we'll need help of this kind, and I hope when your turn comes, you'll find it." It was the most un-Washingtonian thing he'd ever said. And it sent me back to months of research to figure out where that transformation in his character happened and how I could show it in the book. And the same thing happened to Lafayette. They both really changed. And the revolutions that they enacted, which changed the relationships between people from one that was based on a hierarchy, a social hierarchy, to one that's based on self-respect, required that change from them. That's what the book's about.
My guest is James R. Gaines, G-A-I-N-E-S. His book, For Liberty and Glory, Washington, Lafayette, and the Revolutions, is published by Norton. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So let's get back to that question that you say you asked yourself at the beginning. Why was the revolution in France not as successful as the one in America? Is there anything that could have made it less of a bloodbath that then led to a dictatorship?
I think if Louis XVI and Lafayette had been able to combine forces, Lafayette could have supported the monarchy. He was always for a constitutional monarchy. But the closer Louis got to counter-revolutionary forces, and Marie Antoinette was a major factor in that. Her brother was the Emperor of Austria. The less he was willing to trust Lafayette to protect him. There were at a very critical moment, Marie Antoinette said, yes, Lafayette can protect us. Who will protect us from Lafayette? Lafayette was always for a constitutional monarchy for France, and looking back, it's hard not to speculate that that would have been the outcome most desired.
But a constitutional monarchy in France would have been very different than the American solution. He must have been paying attention to what was going on here and the opportunity that Washington had to become a monarch.
Yes, but America wasn't France, and Lafayette at least knew that. He at least knew that he felt that France just psychologically was not prepared for a republic, and in fact, he felt that way at the very end of his life. And he outlasted Washington by 35 years, and was actually leading another revolution in 1830, at which he asked to be the president of a French republic, and ended up crowning another king.
Did Washington ever comment on his protege's role in the French Revolution?
Oh, there's a vast correspondence between them all during the French Revolution and after Lafayette was imprisoned and then got out of prison. They were in contact all the time. Washington, of course, was bound diplomatically he was president at the time, so he couldn't be quite candid. But there's enough candor in his correspondence to sort of let you know that he was trying to help Lafayette from making the mistakes that he made.
What about the other Americans who were Francophiles, like Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson? Were they interrelating with Lafayette?
Not Franklin, but Jefferson, absolutely. Jefferson was in contact with Lafayette quite often until he went to prison. And Thomas Paine was in contact with Jefferson and Washington. Actually, Thomas Paine, at the end of Washington's second term, said because Washington had taken France's, in his view, taken England's view over England in the Franco-English War, it's hard to know, sir, whether you have any principles or whether you've abandoned them.
Well, the Americans must have been horrified by what they were seeing there. They probably would have supported the French Revolution if it hadn't turned and such a gruesome way.
Well, it really came right between Anglophiles and Francophiles in the 1790s. America had its own terrorists who called themselves Jacobins. And in fact, John Adams had arms brought over from the War Department to protect himself from these terrorists. The French Revolution was right in the middle of American politics.
Now, Lafayette wasn't the only Frenchman who fought for the Americans. You described the role that Pierre Beaumarchais, the author of the play, not the opera, the Barber of Seville, played in the American Revolution.
He was the earliest gunrunner when France gave covert aid, before we had an alliance with them. He was a gunrunner, and he provided the arms with which America defeated the British at Saratoga.
Is his role not well enough known?
His role is very, very, very unknown. And so is the role that he played in. I mean, the way he became friends with Louis the 16th was he got a cross-dressing spy in the service of Louis the 15th to promise to dress as a woman for the rest of his life. A very long story, but Beaumarchais is one of my favorite characters in this book.
So in doing the research here, you discovered all sorts of other things that you might not have known
yes,
otherwise.
Yes, indeed.
You found that you were the first person to write about both revolutions as a single narrative. Why do you think this hasn't been done before? They are so inextricably linked.
They are, except in the world of academia, where there are American historians and there are French historians. There are books in which they're written about together, but they're not books that are written as stories. I'm really not an historian. I'm more of a storyteller. I work with primary sources, but I see my job as to make things coherent and to tell a story.
And to present history through the lens of personal relationships.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, America could have gotten involved in the French Revolution, couldn't it, or were we just too unstable?
We were way too weak to become involved in the French Revolution. We didn't have a navy. We couldn't have been of any real help.
You've worked as a managing editor for both Time and People magazines. Do you think you brought a journalistic sensibility to this?
No question about it. I mean, they call journalism the first draft of history. This is an umpteenth draft. And I bring the instincts and I hope skills of a storyteller to history. That's how I consider my work.
And Lafayette wound up in prison, and then got out of prison and wound up trying to effect another revolution.
Yeah, he tried to effect three more revolutions after he got out of prison, and made a very important visit back to the United States during an extremely contested election between John Quincy Adams and Andrew Jackson, when America was close to falling apart as it had ever been. And he was the last surviving general of the Revolutionary War, and talked about the unity of purpose of the Revolutionary period in a time when Americans really needed to be reminded.
For Liberty and Glory, Washington, Lafayette, and Their Revolutions is published by Norton. Thank you so much, James R. Gaines, for being on our show today.
Thank you.